Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you are listening to Milt Hilton and Matt Jones in Soft as the Morning Sunrise. This is Milt Hinson's birthday, born in 1910, one of our great jazz artists, and we share that piece of music with you on this day in history. And speaking of our day in history, this has directly to do with the conversation we're having right now. Yesterday was the birthday of Octavia Butler, who was born in 1947, and I was fortunate enough over the years to have interviewed Octavia Butler three times, and which was just a treasure, especially when she was in the studio the very first time I met her about 12 years ago. And just was an experience that even though I was so familiar with her books and her work and how they meant so much to me over the years, just meeting her was amazing. And as soon as we get our archives straightened out with UMBC, we're going to be putting all those archived discussions with the great Octavia Butler online. But right now we have with us two people to talk about her legacy, Afrofuturism, social justice, and what Octavia Butler meant. Adrienne Marie Brown is with us. She's co-editor of Octavia's Brood, an anthology of visionary science fiction and speculative fiction written by organizers and activists. She's a sci-fi writer and strategy facilitator. Adrienne, welcome. Good to have you on the air with us. Been looking forward to this. Thank you.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Damaris Hill is with us. She's assistant professor of creative writing and African-American and Africana studies at the University of Kentucky. And Dr. Hill, good to have you with us.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
And we're looking forward to you all to join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. You can email me at marksteiner, steinershow@gmail.com, as I just said, 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. So let me just start, Adrienne, with you, that I'm so taken by the stuff that all of you have put together around Octavia's Brood and this whole effort. This book has come out now, right? It's coming out now or it's come out already?
So it's coming out this fall.
This fall, okay.
It's coming out this fall. We thought we were going to have it ready for her birthday.
Right.
And then we realized that only by leaving ourselves totally on the floor were we going to be able to do that. So we thought maybe Octavia wouldn't want that. So we had a few other projects ready for her birthday. We just actually got to spend her birthday in Detroit with a bunch of other amazing organizers and activists. And we got to bring Octavia's Brood to the whole group as part of the opening ceremony. There were a few thousand people there who got to hear some of our writers get to share their pieces in public for the first time, which was really incredible. And then launched a little mini project, Reflections on Octavia Butler's Earthseed, and about 22 different writers writing short reflections on Octavia Butler's work, at the Earthseed verses from Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents. And then we did an oracle storytelling of Black women's lives and had people come to this a set of oracles, including Dr. Alexis Pauline Gums, Dr. Moya Bailey, Dr. Ayanna Jameson, who's with the Octavia Butler Legacy Network. So it was a really beautiful process of folks getting to come and hear stories of Octavia and other Black feminists throughout time who have a lot of wisdom to offer us today.
She had a great deal of wisdom to offer us today, and will for the future, for the future. And Dr. Damaris Hill, let me just come to you, and then I'm going to talk about this, some of the larger issues around what her work says about the philosophy of our existence and the characters she developed. But talk about for you what the importance of Octavia Butler was for all of us.
For me, Octavia Butler was important to me as a young reader. And an aspiring writer who didn't really have the courage to say, I want to be a writer and I don't necessarily want to write in a certain fashion. When I discovered Octavia Butler's works, I think I was first introduced to Kindred, and I picked
it
up in a bookstore, and this was probably the early 90s, I would say, like going into college, because of course she wasn't really anthologized in let's say like a reading list, or she wasn't exactly included in course descriptions when you were enrolled in college. And I'm probably a lot older than Ms. Brown, but so the access was different, right? And so I remember reading Kindred, and probably within a matter of months, I ingested 9 of her 11 published novels.
Mm.
And for her, she brought together my love for science and technology in a literary form that was inclusive without marginalizing or hierarchically subjugating my identity status as a Black woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when it extended beyond the pleasure reading, my earlier criticism was psychoanalytic in nature, and where I looked for archetypes following the theories of Carl Jung in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely saw that Octavia Butler, along with some of the other writers that I talk about in my early scholarship and criticism, were evoking this sense of a great mother, but not in a typical mammified sense or menstrualized sense that was being portrayed previously, right? So it was another way of talking about it, and not her as a writer, but it was another way of talking about how Black women assume roles of leadership that are also roles of service to their community in literary works. And so that's when Lilith's character in her novel Dawn, which is from the Xenogenesis trilogy, really came to life for me.
I'm so taken by what you're doing. I can't wait for the book to come out in the fall and see who you've put together. I've read some of what you're putting together with this. But let me talk about, ask you to bring forth a couple of things. To start with, this idea of Octavia Butler as one of our serious philosophers through her work as a writer. You know, people, we pigeonhole kind of sci-fi writers in one place and don't sometimes mm-hmm. take them serious, but Octavia Butler is someone you cannot not take seriously. It's impossible.
Yeah. I mean, I see her as someone who has created at least two paths forward that are philosophical paths that I find myself now using in my work. One is this earth seed concept, which is how do we, as humans, relate to constant change?
Right.
How do we become adaptive and relational and emergent in everything we do at a personal level, at a communal level? How do we understand that the right relationship to be in as a living being on this planet is to respect change and then see our work as shaping change, shaping the world we want to see? So the Earthseed piece feels really important to actually engage, and that's why doing the reflections on Earthseed felt really important. And I set it up so it could be like a 35-day meditation, right? There's just like, let's just sit with each of these verses and actually let it in and understand, are we ready for that? How do we respond to change now? Does it terrify us? Are we excited by it? Is it a little bit of both? You know, I find that I'm really great with changes that I perceive as positive, but then I recently had a good friend go into ICU, and she's someone who I feel like is a very needed organizer and activist and friend and beloved, and I'm not okay with that change. And so for me, like, okay, what is the personal work I need to do to adapt, to understand this is the next step? So that's one piece of it, and kind of flowing out of that is this concept of emergent strategy. And I feel like if you actually look at the leaders that Octavia offered us in Xenogenesis, in the parables, in the Patanus series, you see these leaders who are not leading in this linear, victory-oriented way necessarily, but they're doing something that I'm calling emergent strategy, because it looks like they're using emergence science, where everything that comes in, they are figuring out, how do I adapt, how do I change, and how do I move all of humanity forward through the actions that I take now, that it's not about necessarily beating someone else. And I feel like, especially in the parables, you know, some really beautiful work happens, like after they've set up Acorn, and then Acorn gets smashed, as a spoiler for anyone who hasn't read the work, you know, just that's just going to happen, I can't help it. But then she figures out she has to go door to door and see every single person that she meets as a potential revolutionary, as a potential part of her movement. And I just feel like that kind of adaptive strategy, which is very much aligned with what the Zapatistas have done, you know, it's something that we can see models of in our world today, but we don't usually uplift that as like, this is the most strategic stuff. And yet it's so powerful because the whole community, every single person she meets, gets to be a part of engaging, creating a new possible future for humanity.
So I'd like folks to join us if you'd like to. 410-319-8888 if you have read and been consumed the wonderful Octavia Butler, whether it's Kindred or Wild Seed, Lilith's Brood, all the amazing things that she put out. Bring your thoughts to the table at 410-319-8888. And as we've been engaging this discussion about Afrofuturism and the world it brings us, your thoughts, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow, gmail.com. Tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. Because Kindred is one of those books that I give out to everybody to read. It's one of the three books I like to give people to read as we think about where we are as human beings on this planet. And I think that's probably the book that grabs everybody first, what she set up. But I'm curious what you think of Damaris. I'll go to you and then come right back to Adrian, is to talk a bit about this idea that the world that Octavia Butler creates is a world that social justice activists can use and do use. And I think it's really interesting what Adrian is doing and kind of linking those two. Can you talk?
Yes. I'm sorry. Did you have a specific question?
No, just that. Just the whole note. Because I think most people don't. I mean, I think that unless you're in, you can read Octavia Butler, but unless you're in the world that really kind of delves into deeply the people around who are bringing her work to life again in this century, then we don't think about it in those terms. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I want to kind of lay out for our listeners.
Well, I totally want to thank Adrian for pulling out those two philosophies in such concrete terms. I think when she discusses, the emergent strategies of leadership, as far as her character, Octavia Butler's characters, that's absolutely true. I think that's probably the whole drive of the plot for the many of her novels, but particularly when it comes to Dawn and the Xenogenesis trilogy. I think also she uses this emergent strategy of leadership to talk about environments and how we negotiate systems of power and how she critiques systems, right? And so when we look at her novel, Dawn, the leadership, the immersion-style leadership, is enacted by the protagonist, Lilith, but the environment in which Lilith is put in is one that allows her to critique biological powers and hierarchies, social hierarchies, allows her to critique the role of leaders and what does it mean to be chosen as a leader. I mean, to those who are unfamiliar with the text, she's basically called upon, the protagonist Lilith is called upon to be the new mother of all humanity. And that book explores in detail what it means to be a service-oriented leader, right? And someone who is perceived to have power and the struggles that come with that role. And so I think that book, probably above all others, in my opinion, allows us to critique what it means to be subjugated because of social structures and systems, what it means to have more power than others within an environment of hierarchies, and how to negotiate that as an immersion-style leader. Right, so we have other books where she talks about collective community, such as like the Patternist Theory, and points out persons of authority in ways that the collective can negotiate with that power. But I think in the Xenogenesis trilogy, she really complicates these notions of immersion and activist style leadership and to be chosen to lead.
Adrian, pick up on that, and just your, especially, I'm really so fascinated about what you're creating here for people, which is this symbiosis, this interaction between social activism, change, and Octavia Butler.
Yeah, I mean, Octavia's Brood, you know, basically that's the whole centerpiece of it, right, is this question that gets raised in Dawn, what does it actually mean to be the creators of what comes next, rather than just the victims of what happens? Or both and, right? Like there are things that we cannot change or things that we're a victim of, and how do we step in and change it? When Walida Imarisha, who's my co-editor, we were sitting and talking, and we realized, you know, that all social justice work is science fiction. It is speculative fiction. And Octavia
I love that idea.
Let us see that. It's such a, like, it was so clear. It's like we're trying to create a world we have never seen. We're trying to create a world with no prisons, with no war, where everyone has enough food, where there's education for all the babies, education that feels liberating. You know, like we're talking about things where we're like, we haven't experienced this, not in our lifetimes. We may not experience it in our lifetimes. So all of it is speculation. All of it is speculative and magical in a way. And so then it feels like Octavia gave us these tools for what that looks like. You know, she gave us tools for how do you assess who you can trust in that work. How do you acknowledge where people are at in their capacity to be a leader? How important it is that it's not just one solitary leader. You know, over and over again, we see her characters really sitting in conversation and building shared philosophy. And one of the things that's come out of that is this idea of a collaborative ideation, that even in the place where we come up with our ideas, we don't want to be by ourselves in that space, because then that makes us think we're the only ones who can hold the idea. And she faces the dangers of that over and over again. And so with Octavia's Brood, we have all of these writers. We have 22 folks. And I mean, we have folks like Mumia. We have folks like Chandanri Du. We have, like, Cherie Thomas is writing our intro. Like, we have folks who are well-established in their work and well-known, in addition to a lot of folks who maybe folks haven't heard of. They've been in the trenches doing social justice work. And the idea is that they are these visionary minds. They can see some of what the limitations are of our current organizing work and some of the places we could go next. And from that jumping off point, start to write new futures for us. And it's really exciting work. And it's challenging work. It's you know, because the idea is not to give people utopia, but also not to get completely mired in like Godzilla level dystopia, you know, but to be somewhere in between. That's like, well, how do we write compelling futures? And I think that's what Octavia did so often, was like, that sounds scary, but I'd also be totally curious and interested to be alive and be a part of that level of human evolvement. How do we write compelling futures like that for ourselves, for our cities, for our people?
There's an email that came in. Let me just read this to you all before we run out of time, and we'll come back to a larger discussion, especially this fall when this book comes out, and I can't wait for it to come out. Mark writes in, something I like a lot about Octavia Butler is that she presented models for different ways of doing relationships. The triad structure of Oncali and the human relationships in the Exogenesis series and the polyamorous vampire family in Fledgling played out alternatives to monogamous family structures in a way that was consistent with her career-long critique of hierarchy and power. So that's interesting. Adrian, why don't you start?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I will just say that Octavia has created new conditions for me when it came to desire and to understanding what moves people forward. So if you really look at how humans move forward, we get compelled by fear, but we also get compelled by pleasure. And so much of our society is structured around trying to control and contain that pleasure, that it's seen as like a loose force. Passion is seen as a loose force. And I feel like so much of her work wrote stories in which passion and pleasure were able to move outside of the boundaries of traditional hierarchy so that people could build community around it rather than, again, denying it or trying to push it down. I was like, what does it look like if we actually embrace the fact that most humans don't spend our entire lives, 60 years, only attracted to one person, only loving one person, only shaped by one person or changed by one person? We're in community. And what does it look like to actually build our lives in community as opposed to in these isolated units where a lot of dangerous patterns can emerge? I think that there's something really powerful about being in, so there's a critique also of like just romantic love being the unit, the primary unit around which we build our lives. I feel like Octavia offered us options to see what does it look like to build our lives around children? What does it look like to build our lives around pleasure? What does it look like to build our lives around shared resources? So I love the models that are in there. I think that that's the next level of stuff that I want to see folks explore, again, politically. Because I think sometimes it's like, oh, we should all go off and form communes. Or I think polyamory is often seen as a sexual proclivity instead of being seen as like, this is actually one of the ways we could potentially survive this moment in our history in terms of resources, in terms of how we need to be able to raise children in totally, fully loving and complete environments instead of environments that are where parents are isolated from each other and not able to get support to work and to raise their children.
Adrian, I totally agree with what you were saying, but I also see her plays on sexuality and family structure as articulating what it means to be human in our purest form, not even like what it would be to in the future or like critiquing power now. I think it's a critique of industrialism, and I think she's harking back to how families are naturally structured and formed when we're not performing or catering to the hierarchies that are in society that make life in this present time period easier for people to mass produce, let's say, clothing or to mass produce like mortgages and the financial expectations of the space that we live in. So I don't really see it. Although I admired what Butler was exposing as far as sexuality in most of her novels, I didn't really see it as new. I saw her as evoking ancestral spaces that existed before we privileged industrial styles of living.
I mean, in some ways, what you're saying, I think, is really fascinating, Damaris, because, I mean, Adrian, it seems to me that one of the things that Octavia Butler did was to marry those, to understand that what we have is a continuum, that the future we're looking at is where it's the past, and we've lost something in that. And she was kind of trying to reawaken that in us through her work.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, one of the things she offered a lot was that if we don't understand the past, we can't actually predict the future.
Right, which was Kindred.
And,
right?
It was just like, wait, we need to be able to look back.
Novels, really.
And in Kindred, in all of her work, she's like, we need to look back and understand. We're not separate. You know, this is one of the things I feel like her stories say over and over again. We're actually not so separate as we think we are. It's this myth of separation, this myth of separate races or separate spaces, that familial spaces, a certain kind of thing, that one kind of person can hold power. Over and over again, she unveils, and if you look back, we are this interconnected body, and we need to learn to live in right relationship to that.
Yeah,
I agree with you, Adrian. When you look at Mind of My Mind, too, and that's one of Octavia Butler's novels that has a lot
absolutely.
Of sex in it, metaphorically and physically on the page. But when you look at the idea of trying to create a superior human species and how the most powerful being that is born decides that she's going to use collective power rather than individual power. And it's actually expressed more or less in an orgasm. So what does it mean to have a collective orgasm? Is she talking just in sexual terms, or is she talking more in existential terms, or is she talking about this collective desire that we may have as a community and this power of the erotic, for lack of a better term, that that Lord expresses in her work, that Audre Lorde expresses in her work. So.
Yeah, I often compare the uses of the erotic from Audre Lorde with the Patternist series and really thinking about how Octavia got to the root of what it is to experience pleasure is like to really feel that connected with another human being in real time. And how most of our culture is not oriented around allowing that kind of connection to develop. We're setting so many rules and guidelines and ways that we're supposed to interact that are not necessarily aligned with our nature. And then I feel like there's a piece of it that says, well, then what do you do to shape that, to shape those interactions to actually be intimate? And that's why Doro can't participate in it, because he can't relinquish his power in the way you have to relinquish your power for true intimacy. You can't be vulnerable in the way you have to be vulnerable for true intimacy. And I think it's a really important call for this moment in our history, especially as Black people, as people of color. How do we learn that instead of going into the battle all armed up, how do we become vulnerable? How do we adapt as our way of moving forward so that we all get to move forward?
Absolutely. I think we should like teach Mind of My Mind over and over again.
at the very least, we only have a couple minutes left, literally a couple minutes left. But I'm really curious about exploring in greater depth next time just this whole issue of how you use Octavia Butler in terms of people who are organizing and seeking social justice and trying to change society, and what you would have them, and what would you have them, let me ask you this very quick question, what would you have them read first, Adrian?
So, a couple of things. I usually have people start off with Wild Seed. If they're really starting off, the first thing, I think that Wild Seed is a really great example of almost everything in the entire world coming together in one story. But we also run collective sci-fi writing workshops. And some of the time, it's not about getting them to read someone else's work, but to come sit down and start to think of themselves as creators. We have everyone collectively build a world and then write stories within the world that they have built together, which is connected to the issues that they need visionary fiction on in their own community. And I think sometimes that's more accessible than even anyone else's work. And then from that place, I say, now go get hooked on Octavia. She's going to take you to the next level.
Well, I do want to thank you both. I wish we had much more time for this, and we will do this again. When Octavia's Boot comes out, we will do it again, at least on February 24th, the anniversary of her passing, and we'll do this again just to have more conversations about Octavia Butler, and we will, as soon as we can, get all of our previous interviews with Octavia Butler, obviously the ones we had in the past, up on the web.
There's one more thing, though. The save the date for, there's a 10-year anniversary of Octavia Butler's legacy to tell people to save the date for 2016, February 26th and 27th. 2016, we're going to be gathering and celebrating Octavia. There's more information at the Octavia Butler Legacy Network page.
We will make sure we have all of that. So I want to thank you both so much. Dr. Damaris Hill, pleasure to meet you and have you on the air with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. And Adrian Marie Brown, great to have you on the air here. Thank you so much. And we look forward to talking to you some more.
Both. That's awesome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Take care of you both. I want to thank you all for tuning in here. We're going to go out with Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash Jackson. It's her birthday. We've got to get to these credits fast. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MEEC, by the Maryland State Education Association. From funding the Common Cause, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Producers Cedric Mavronis and Mark Gunnery. Engineering is Andre Melton, Alex Boston, Matt Malice, and Sienna Greaves are interns. Go to steinershow.org to find out information about our guests and download a podcast, or go to iTunes. All our podcasts are right there. And for Public Radio, WEAA, 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Vote! Take care.